This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. I'm AB, joined, as always, by my good friend, Nate, a.k.a. Epitasis. Nate, I just saw you a couple days ago. What's up, man? How have you changed?
How have I changed? Well, I've been to work since we last saw each other. You know, that's pretty much it, I think. Okay, we saw each other last weekend and then did a podcast last weekend.
That's right.
So pretty much, I've just been working since then.
Okay. Yeah. We did a podcast, about going to see Limp Bizkit together. So
yeah, check that out. One of the very few podcasts, I do, or that we do, that I listen back to, you know, we got some good notes on that one, I thought, which, you know, we don't always get a ton of feedback in general, but it seemed like people enjoyed that one. So I took a listen to it.
How did it sound?
Well, you know, you kind of obsessively just listen to yourself and I go, my laugh kind of sounded like a dumb guy laugh there. And you're like, what does a dumb guy laugh mean? Then I'm like, well, it's the kind of the way a dumb guy laughs. So I did a lot of that. But I did. I think we made some really clear eyed deep observations about Limp Bizkit and Fred Durst. So you know, it was nice to hear that.
All right. Well, make sure you check that out at patreon.com/everythingelite. Nice place for a plug. Also joined, of course, by Mike Spears. Mike, Do you ever listen to yourself back on podcasts?
I have engineered and have set up a system that I have limited the amount of time that I have to listen to any of us talk after we're done recording. Any of us. But I made time to listen to the Linkin Park podcast, and I put you all over when we were really talking to each other.
Close.
Limp Bizkit. I'm sorry, Limp Bizkit. It's been a very long day for me. Very long day. But the Limp Bizkit podcast is probably one of my favorite things that have gone up on the Patreon. It was an absolute blast. And it's something that, you know, even though we are quickly approaching Everything Elite Patreon 2.0, I feel like that we're putting out some of our strongest work. Patreon.com/everythingelite.
Nice. I like that.
How about that? I turned that around after I botched the start, you know.
Yes. Thank you for the kind words. And yeah, we really, really hit people with the plugs hard right off the top of the show this week.
The very first episode of Everything Evolves, I obsessively went through and deleted every and pause and sound fucking perfect. And then I quit doing that by episode two.
Buddy, you could teach your computer to do that for you.
Well, I didn't know that.
I can't believe you don't know how to do machine learning on your computer yet, Aaron. Come on.
It's not even machine learning. It's basically figure out everyone's decibel and like for like mouth and sounds and actually talking.
Ooh,
and just like program out like, okay, I should give this so many microseconds. And it pretty much just plug and play. And then, you know, it's.
I'm gonna try to frustrate this by doing very loud ums.
This will be my last episode of Everything Elite tonight.
I'm sorry to hear that. No, now it's all louder. No, I didn't get it right. Sorry to hear that, Mike. But I'm dedicated to my loud ums.
Aaron, I don't think he understands how decibels work.
If you want to see Nate come up with more ways to irritate Mike, make sure you follow us on Twitter at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike is at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Just wherever you listen to podcasts, search Everything Elite, hit subscribe. You get the episodes quickly, and I am told it's helpful to our podcast. It helps people find the podcast maybe or something if we're more popular. If you use the Apple Podcast app, give us a 5-star rating and review, please. And I guess we've already plugged this, but the best way to support the show, of course, is to go to patreon.com/everythingelite. A somewhat, I've seen some variable responses, reactions to the episode of Dynamite Tonight. So I'm interested to see, or to hear, I guess see, we're on video, everyone's reactions here on the show. So Nate, if you'll kick us off for Elite or Delete, what was your favorite thing from the show?
Well, Aaron, I assume that you have written down your prediction for what my favorite thing will be on the show, and you've put it in a sealed envelope so we can find out if you were correct or not.
Yes, our friends at Ernst & Young will be handling the envelope.
Okay. My elite pick for this week was the main event of Jon Moxley versus Lance Archer, the Texas death match. Is that what it was? Okay, Aaron's doing fist bumping, but I'm not sure if it's happy or frustrated. There's no way to know.
I'm happy, of course. I figured, you know, it's kind of like when you're playing rock, paper, scissors with someone and they hit you with that paper. You know, you did rock, they hit you with paper, but you're like, you know, your brain is thinking, should I now go, should I go paper now to beat their rock? Am I saying this right? But you're like, no. They're just going to repeat it again. You just follow it. You lean right into it. So that's what I've done. I've gone back to Nate would pick the main event, and I was right.
Glad to hear it. I am very good at rock, paper, scissors, I have to say.
Oh, wow.
But I thought really a match that capped off the show in a pleasant way, sent everybody home happy, had a, I think, surprising result. Did I? I might have been on the show last week saying there was no chance Lance Archer wins this match. Did that happen? That sounds... That sounds like I might have done that. Who knows? I don't listen back to the show, as we know. But they went, I think, above and beyond. What I really enjoyed in particular about this match was I really don't like when there is an element in a match that is like actually dangerous so that all the guys kind of have to tiptoe around it and you can see this happening. For an example, there was, I think, a pandemic era match where somebody was threatening Hiromu with an electric razor because he's like, I'm going to shave your head like a young boy, right? And because they had an actual electric razor in there, they kind of had to like do this little faux struggling, like, oh no, I'm going to come at you with the razor. And it's just, you know, a half step slower than everything else in wrestling. And you're like, okay, you're fucking exposing how slow this is. That did not occur in this match. They had a fork in this match, and every time they employed this fork, of course, because, you know, they could do so safely, they were fucking teeing off on each other with this fork, and it looked great. You got the color, you got the barbed wire, you got the big spots, and you got a huge crowd reaction, and they had Lance Archer go over, win the title in his hometown, home state, which is, you know, just a nice little piece of booking. Lance Archer probably needed a win to really legitimize him in this promotion. He's been somebody that they've, for the most part, successfully heated up from time to time, but always, you know, failed in the big match. So I think this was a pretty good time to kind of swerve a little bit and go, no, we're going to give Lance Archer a big win over a top guy, give him a title in this company and another company. And, you know, it doesn't really even hurt Moxley either, because, you know, you can say Lance Archer had the home field advantage being in his hometown. You know, they covered Moxley a little bit saying, oh, I think he's trapped in the barbed wire. So, you know, that gives him a little protection. And it really, you know, put a nice peak on the end of this show when it didn't really have another match on this show to sort of be a strong point or be a calling card.
Yeah, this was a show overall that there was a lot of stuff that amused me and I had a good time watching, but wasn't necessarily like the stuff that you come away from a show going like, oh yeah, I'm gonna remember that this show had Chris Jericho just doing a Frankensteiner off the top rope and looking really good out of it. It needed something like this. And for Lance Archer, who, like Nate said on about, like, he's someone that they've been very successful in building up, but he kind of needed the legitimizing one. And Jon Moxley really is as legitimizing one as you can get outside of defeating Kenny Omega. So it put over him huge in the Metroplex. The crowd went really insane for this one. The crowd was kind of up and down all show. I would say that this crowd probably was more in line with Miami than the show last week in Cedar Park, I would say. But this match rocked. It just, they were willing to go for it. I mean, the fact that like Archer came out with kendo sticks and immediately like they were going at it there, and then Archer using a plant in the crowd was just fantastic as well. Just,
do you think his name was Mitch?
Mitch Plant? No. Wait, is that the name of the plant in the Ambrose Asylum? Did I just explain your joke?
You did.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, this was just a blast of a match and exactly what Archer needed. And, you know, it's going to, this kind of frees up Moxley in a way that's kind of fascinating as well. So I think this was a home run for, across the board for everyone.
Yeah, it was an example of like how some death matches, or not really death match, but like violent matches in AEW succeed and some fail. And the answer, as always, is how legitimately violent does the match seem? And so you had the fork, as Nate mentioned, and they didn't fuck around with it. That part at the end where Archer was slamming it into Mox's head, you could see it like catching on his forehead. That was great. I was really nervous when they brought the barbed wire out because I remembered how that sucked from the, what, Omega Janela match? I believe that's who had the...
Yeah.
I remember the mostly a lot of foot stuff in that match.
Right. Yeah.
I don't remember the barbed wire sucking necessarily.
It was like foot stuff into the barbed wire that they kept on like trying to do atomic drops onto it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember being crazy about it, but here you had, first of all, like the great bump through the tables, but then you could see Mox literally stuck in the barbed wire. It was in his flesh. And then just, you know, that choke slam on the two chairs, which is like an easy spot, but something that you know fucking hurts. So I thought they veered toward the right kind of violence in this match and made it believable. But it also sets up, for me at least, pretty high expectations going into the Nick Gage Chris Jericho match for next week, that they will have to top this in some way.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I'm sorry, the Nick Gage Chris Jericho match. Just wanted to say it again.
I don't.
Nick
I
Gage
don't...
and the Painmaker.
You're right.
That's right. Yeah, the good correction. I totally forgot about that chair spot somehow. So that, you know, goes to show that they had that packed full of ideas and full of big violent stuff that they were going to do. I also just want to take a moment and like appreciate how like robust and consistent and productive this like New Japan relationship is now. You know, you go back to the days where we were like speculating about the Forbidden Door on here, and you know, other people would be like, oh, it's never happening, there's not gonna, you know, New Japan's too pissed at them because they left and all this stuff, and that's just, you know, all been utterly erased at this point. They're setting up a New Japan talent in Hikuleo to be the challenger for Lance Archer next, with the Bullet Club shirt. And of course, he's the brother of the Gorillas of Destiny, who, you know, have been trying to do some angle or shoot angle or something with the Elite for what seems like years now. But it's just pretty cool and pretty novel to be like, yeah, no, New Japan belt's going to be defended on this show. It's actually going to change hands on this show. And then they're going to set up another New Japan guy next week to be the first challenger for the new champion. And then, you know, there's going to be AEW presence on the New Japan show in LA. And it's just like, hey, this is to everyone's benefit. It's certainly to New Japan's benefit right now, who, you know, has to deal with the clap crowds and worse COVID conditions in Japan. So, you know, they've got a little spark from AEW here to make sure that they've still got interest in the West, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, now, of course, COVID has intervened, but I think it was my take at the time that the AEW New Japan partnership was vital for New Japan in the West, because the New Japan tours in the West before COVID had failed miserably. So I think that's bearing out that they need AEW in the West if they're, you know, if they continue to think that encouraging,
it's a big expansion market for them.
Expanding among Western fans, I think they need to be hooked up with AEW. But also, obviously, it's very helpful for AEW because the people who like AEW mostly like New Japan, and those people coming over to AEW create some excitement
even if it's not more people tuning in, I agree with Mike that probably people who are going to tune in to watch whoever from New Japan, most of those people already watch AEW, but it creates more buzz and more excitement in the building, if nothing else.
Yeah, and they called that out specifically as stuff they wanted to do. Like, even if you're not necessarily adding viewers by putting Hikuleo on the show, you just, you make your viewers that are there more enthusiastic about it and more happy about it. And, you know, that's gonna trickle down, I think, eventually to be like, oh, AEW has good word of mouth with wrestling fans. They do stuff that's exciting and, you know, novel and all those things, which will, you know, create sort of a positive brand association.
All right, Mike, your pick for the most elite thing on the show this week?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about positive brand associations, Nate, there's probably no person in at least North America independent wrestling who has the positive brand. I completely forgot what you, association. That's it. Positive brand association.
The PBA, yeah.
The PBA, yeah. I mean, brought to you by Miller High Life. But Nick Gage. Nick Gage coming out and being the secret second labor of Jericho in a no rules match next week. And it's just something that, I mean, there was talk that of him being in the original Casino Battle Royal last year. So the second Casino Battle Royal, obviously he had his Achilles issue and like this. And then with like Dark Side of the Ring, giving him more exposure than ever. The real fact that he's kind of the closest thing to like a independent wrestling folk hero at this point, and having him come out on Dynamite after they were using like independent stars during the Cody AEW title reign or the TNT title reign, and then like kind of showing that they could do this on the road and come back to this, I think is really kind of exciting. And now we're faced with the proposition of, oh, Nick Gage on national television. That's wild. That's something that 18 months ago would have been a fever dream, and it's just really exciting. And it's even the way that MJF kind of presented it, I felt like was really exciting, and it instantly now makes this Charlotte show really like sneakily they've built up the show into being a monster one next week.
Yeah, I mean, this was extremely cool to see, you know, as a fan of Nick Gage, and yeah, they did, I think, set the table for it really well. The, you know, MJF, of course, being a guy who's been through GCW and, you know, through Beyond and stuff. So it, you know, kind of makes logical sense that he can make that call and bring in Nick Gage to fight, you know, first ballot Wrestling Observer Hall of Famer Chris Jericho in a hardcore match on national television. We discussed Nick Gage is like, oh, could they bring Nick Gage in like before the first show on this promotion even happened? I feel like, I'm pretty sure I said no. I'm pretty sure I was just like, no, because you can't do Nick Gage without doing, you know, the ultra violence or whatever. And you can't do that on TNT. I think I've just been proven wrong about what TNT is willing to do on their television, because they have blood and, you know, barbed wire and tacks up on seemingly every episode of the show. So it's very cool to see that come to fruition. And of course we did. Yeah. Like you said, you know, they had originally planned for him to be in the Casino Battle Royale and that didn't work out. So it's just, you know, it's an impossible, I don't know about dream match. It's an impossible, I wouldn't say freak show match. It's just a crazy wrestling match that, you know, we'll remember as like a log line probably forever. I know he got pulled from a show recently because, you know, he was beat up from his steady schedule of death matches and the toll, you know, that can take on a guy. So I do hope that, you know, maybe that was in anticipation or preparation of this or something. And, you know, he can get right and be in a good state to go and have a great match and show what he's all about with Chris Jericho. I think that'd be just awesome to see him kind of get his roses in his career at this point.
Does this feel to you guys like a one-off, or do we think Nick Gage is coming to AEW?
I think it's a one-off.
It feels like a Jeff Cobb kind of one-off. But, you know, I think we've seen with Tony that if Tony sees a guy and likes a guy, like, hey, let's put Wheeler Utah on the show. Oh, now he's going to be on every show. So, yeah, if Nick Gage, you know, goes out and kills it and gets a huge reaction and pops a rating, then I have no doubt Tony will be like, okay, you're doing a death match every week now.
Yeah, my only hope, I mean, my hope is they just sign Nick Gage, and I don't really care what he does. I just want AEW to sign Nick Gage and see him more often and be taken care of. But I hope they do Nick Gage versus John Moxley in this promotion. You know, Mox now doesn't have a title, so, you know, you can get away from that. Obviously, they have a history. They like each other. So I think that would be an easy match to do.
Well, I mean, they've been doing angles for it on GCW shows for a couple months now. So
haven't they kind of veered now completely towards Cardona at this point?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they did, what, two or three angles with Moxley and Gage at GCW shows. And then I guess Cardona kind of intervened. You know, he was like posing as Moxley for one of the angles that Cardona did. So yeah, I don't know if that's just like it's a longer road to get to Moxley, or if Moxley changed his mind or something about doing the match. You know, no way for me to know. But you know, the groundwork would still be there if they want to do it in either promotion.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
All right. I guess it is my turn. I don't know. I'm gonna do a surprising one, I think, and my pick is the opener of this show, Chris Jericho versus Sean Spears. Nothing I would have expected to like, and certainly not as much as I liked it. This was definitely my favorite match until the main event happened on this show. I don't know. It was like Jericho, as much as the three of us or people who we're friends with might be tired of Chris Jericho in this role, the crowd is not. The crowd was on fire for everything Chris Jericho did. He clearly fed off that. He did that sick Frankensteiner that looked awesome. I don't know. It was a fun little story. The crowd, obviously, you get a lot more grace with kind of this dumb shit that we've all complained about during COVID. You get a lot more grace with some of these silly angles when the crowd goes nuts for it. And you also had a great finish, you know, with the Judas effect at the end. Maybe it leading right into Nick Gage helped, but I just thought it was a really fun match. And, you know, yes, you got Chris Jericho, who's one of your top stars, but this was actually a good starting off point for the show.
Okay, yeah, I'll talk about what I liked from this match. Yeah, Jericho has a weird, funny presence now. I think Mike probably first called him like a fat lucha brawler. And he was like peaking in that sort of mode in this match, where it's like, you know, for half the shit he's doing, he kind of looks bad and is like moving slowly around the ring and doing like little pushes at the guy's upper body or whatever as his offense. And then, you know, every once in a while, he'll pull out something brilliant like the Frankensteiner, of course. And yeah, you know, he's just reached a point in his career where the crowd fucking loves him. They're going to go crazy for him. It rarely matters what he's doing. You know, the Texas crowd was pretty on point all night. They were, you know, popping for all the big spots in the matches. But yeah, even, you know, Jericho was getting pops for the worst looking shit that he did in this match. And then later when he unveiled the pain... the painmaker when he did the big startling reveal of the makeup over his eyes, where he took a name from Okada's Rainmaker and did Bushi cosplay and it became the painmaker, the crowd popped for it, and I could not believe it. I'm like, wow, the crowd loves the painmaker. And yeah, I also think, you know, like we talked about, MJF, you know, built up Gage really well for his debut. MJF was also good on commentary, I think. Unlike me, he does not have a stupid guy laugh. And he's, you know, just very articulate. And I kind of think he put JR off key, off step when he, you know, took a shot at JR pretty early in the broadcast. And then JR was quiet for like 5 minutes. But I enjoyed that. And it all, you know, as part of the longer labor's story, this was a kind of a fine step in that story, I guess.
Yeah, this was just fun, and with this kind of match, they kept it as it should have been, and we're really getting like Chris Jericho feeling himself at this point. Like the fact that the crowds are so into just the Painmaker reveal, that's just going to encourage him, and it's going to be something where like I'm gonna be excited to see like where all this is gonna go with him and Nick Gage. Like, just like I feel like we still need to unpack it a little bit. Chris Jericho, the Painmaker, is having a no rules match with Nick Gage on national TV next Wednesday. Like, Chris Jericho that we just saw this week do a Frankensteiner and probably like one of the shittiest versions of his springboard dropkick. Like the first one, did you notice like how he was barely
yeah, it was bad.
He was just he was not having it. But no, this was a lot of fun. We got unprotected chair shots on national TV. I mean, wrestling is back, and you know, the like easily the most palatable Sean Spears has been in a long time has been his like step as like the goon that he has to get out of the way, the flunky that Chris Jericho has to spot out of his way. And you know, this didn't overstay its welcome. The crowd is hot, and you know, between like this and I had a theory about MJF and Nick Gage that I wanted to run by y'all before like we're fully done, at least right now talking about it. So MJF has shown a propensity of being able to go and get people to do his bidding in AEW. He had the Butcher and the Blade, he's had Wardlow. And I like the idea that now he's like to a point where he's like going through his address books. Like, all right, I already called him. It's like, oh, Nick Gage is the perfect person for the situation. Like, how far away are we from getting like Jimmy Lloyd at this point? Because like, okay, we can't discount that out of hand now.
No, trying to think if they've like interacted on a GCW show or something I've seen. I would like to see that. That would, you know, I guess, I mean, Jimmy Lloyd does have a storied career in AEW, of course, being opposite the hard cam when Bret Hart came out at the first Double or Nothing and you could see Jimmy Lloyd pop for him. So yeah, it would be nice, you know, if they brought him back for some MJF angle, it would be fun to see them like incorporate that in some silly Sammy G vlog sketch or something.
I want everyone on record on this. Nick Gage versus the Painmaker. Yes or no, are there light tubes in this match?
I think no, but there will be glass.
Oh, I kind of like that answer. Yeah, maybe they do a gimmicked, you know, broken glass kind of thing, and somebody takes a bump on it.
Yeah, yeah. And also worth stating, to my knowledge, North Carolina and South Carolina do not have a commission, so we're not going to get any of that full gear Maryland bullshit coming out of this.
I kind of think AEW would maybe let them do light tubes. I kind of think Chris Jericho is like, I'm not doing a light tube. That's where I'm at.
I'm just ready to let myself get disappointed. That's all there is to it. They're going to do fucking light tubes. Chris Jericho is taking a light tube over the head next week on Dynamite.
Not out of play. I mean, he did bring out the... I guess everybody's doing pizza cutters now. Callahan used the pizza cutter on Omega on the Impact pay-per-view, and Gage had the pizza cutter here. So, I don't know. He kind of set the table for a pizza cutter to be used. And is a pizza cutter better or worse than a light tube? I don't know.
I just want to see fucking light tubes on TNT. That's really all. We're just in this promotion generally. No light tubes.
It's going to happen. If not necessarily on TNT, then at some point on the pay-per-view.
I hope so. Listener Elite this week, if you join our Patreon and jump in the Discord, we have a channel where you can chime in with your own Elites or Deletes. We'll pick one of each week. Swarls this week, Elite, after a run of strange shows after Double or Nothing, AEW is officially back. I have to agree.
Yeah, again, you know, being back on tour, having the live crowds really makes so much go down smoothly that might have been colder or weirder in front of a, you know, small fan amount at Daily's Place.
Yes, I think that's a big part of it. It's just like, oh, this is much nicer with fans. But you know what else is nice? Not having hairy dick and balls. The Olympics, Euros, baseball, major championships, and concerts are all in this summer. You know what isn't? A wild and hairy bush. It's time to tame your pubes with help from our friends at Manscaped. They've got the fourth generation performance package, including the brand new Lawnmower 4.0. If an athlete treats their body like royalty, why not treat your pubes like Olympic gold? You join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com with the code This Is. I think that's fascinating because in that scenario, if you're comparing your pubes to athletes treating their bodies like royalty, you have to think you're like an Olympian when it comes to using your junk, right? I mean, that's what Manscaped is trying to get across, I think.
It makes perfect logical sense, Aaron.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, they've got a whole thing to help you get in Olympic shape, get your pubes in Olympic shape. You get the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. So it's not just your pubes. They got everything. The Crop Preserver ball deodorant, the Crop Reviver toner, two free gifts, the boxer briefs, the Shed travel bag. Talk about a world-class dismount into a post-quarantine world. This package is the perfect package for your package and peak performance in whatever sport you desire, including sexual activity with the person of your choice. You got fourth generation trimmer. It's got a cutting edge ceramic blade. You've got the 7,000 RPM motor, a multifunction on off switch, a 4,000K LED spotlight, and the trimmer is waterproof. Michael Phelps is drooling just thinking about the possibilities. You know, those swimmers, I bet all the swimmers use Manscaped. I mean, you got to be really tidy if you're swimming in the Olympics. I'll be looking forward to seeing that. After trimming your pubes, show them some sportsmanship with Manscaped's liquid formulations, the Crop Preserver, the Crop Reviver. I think I've put over the Crop Preserver weekly on this show. So you just get 20% off free shipping with the code This Is at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code This Is at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped. All right, time to talk about the things we did not like from this show, and I'm fired up. Nate, you can't even fuck me here because I got two that I'm really excited about. I'm happy to go on about either. You can only pick one.
No, I'm not worried about picking something that you're going to pick to delete. I'm going to delete the opener on this show. I thought this match sucked. It was a big downer to start the show to have Chris Jericho maybe looking like he's in the worst shape of his run versus Sean Spears, who is the lowest guy on the overness chart for the inner circle. No, the pinnacle, the pineapple. There were elements, I think the chair thing can work for Sean Spears. It's, we've said this, talked about this on a lot of different topics, on a lot of the stunts and big bumps that they do in this promotion. And it kind of applies to Sean Spears' chair gimmick. If you're going to let him tee off on people's heads with the chair, then it's a good gimmick and it's going to have dividends for them. But they're not going to commit to that a lot of the time, and probably for good reason. I hate this thing with chairs in any promotion where, I'm going to sit here and show the broad side of my back to you so you can lay in a chair shot just across my back. And even, from the first spot in this match where Sean Spears is like, ha-ha, I got a chair, and then Jericho gets the best of him immediately by, pushing his forehead with the side of his arm, and Sean's like, oh, no, I dropped the chair. Just immediately took me out of all of it, and then they were out of sync and, fucking up on whips to the ropes immediately after that and for the first few minutes of this match. So apart from those bright spots that I talked about earlier, I thought this sucked and the guys looked awful.
I think that's kind of somewhat drew me into this match was just like Jericho really tapping into that point of his career where it's just like, all right, you're still trying to do the hits, but sometimes your body can't do the hits. And I feel like we had a lot of that. I mean, there was a lot of people on the show that we could talk about how much gas is in their tank. And I feel like I can see where you're coming from with this. I thoroughly enjoyed this opener. I thought it was an absolute blast. But if you're not invested in Jericho or if you weren't finding certain things funny, I can get how much of a drag this could be.
This is good, Nate, because this usually is the thing it feels like that you would have said was elite and I would have deleted. So I really like the switch that we've made here. That's fun.
I was surprised when you said it was elite. I cannot imagine how this was better than the Christian versus Matt Hardy match that you hated. That this was way worse than that. But yeah, I mean, Mike, you're right. Like the Fat Lucha Brawler Jericho stuff, I do get a certain joy out of. And it, you know, it's the kind of stuff that like a guy would do in Japan or Mexico, and I'd be like, this is the greatest fucking shit I've ever seen. Like this guy's the best wrestler of all time. I actually, you know, he refuses to take a bump and he does his little, you know, shitty offense, but then he busts out his two signature spots and the crowd absolutely loses their shit. That's what pro wrestling is all about. I agree with all of that. And I just said it. so I agree with myself, but you know, if we're like trying to be in a mode where it's like, oh, you know, this is AEW, we have, you know, all this young up and coming talent, and we pretend that it's like athletic competition where, you know, guys compete to better the other person in a competition where they fight. And then you see Chris Jericho, you know, doing his little running forearm and you're like, no, it just exposes the whole thing is ridiculous. So, you know, it you kind of have it both ways.
Well, Mike, it's up to you to I'm going to have some time to figure out what I'm going to do after I hear which way you go. So I'm
okay.
Fascinated to hear what you want to delete from this show, Mike.
I think the thing, and I have a feeling that somehow it's going to be hard for me to pick one of the things that you, it would be really funny if you were like, oh yeah, there's some way that no matter what, we're not, both of us didn't pick your thing. And then somehow we completely steer clear, and then you have a bounty of riches here. This FTR and Santana Ortiz segment was just dreadful. And it was something that was, and it's not that it was like dreadful in a way that just was like meandering and going on forever. It was dreadful in a way that, one, what did they accomplish there that they've been trying to accomplish each and every single time other than Tully Blanchard calling out for his boys? Like, there's no difference there. And then two, just bizarrely edited in a way that it was so discordant to watch that, like, talking about upbringings and then, like, Santana is doing this really impassioned promo and, like, bringing up, like, his life and bringing up, like, oh, yeah, my mom had to fight against slumlords to get a fair rent and all that. And then just, like, an abrupt cut back to FTR Ball talking about the three things I love are this tag team, my family, and pro wrestling. Just like completely just looked like it was edited or felt like it was edited by like a freshman intro to video production class, which is just a very bizarre thing there. And it was the thing that like it came away with the show going being really perplexed about how they've just like constantly have done like kind of bizarre one step forwards, one step back, and how much they constantly harp on. They have elected to go like, oh, all four of us have had, FTR believes that all four of them have had tough upbringings, whereas he and Ortiz just go like, your experience was not my experience, and my experience was not your experience. And they keep on harping on that as like the big plot point for this match, outside the fact that it was like, oh, these are like two of the biggest tag teams in the company. And if it worked talking about like the shared experiences and like disagreement there, then totally fine. But instead, we have this storyline that has not made a lot of sense when you could have had a much more obvious and simpler one.
Yeah, I do. I like the, I don't know, ambition to try and do a feud about like a bigger idea, because, you know, I've complained about AEW stories all hitting a lot of the same beats. It's like, oh, you know, I'm splitting up with my friends, or I'm joining a stable, or I turned on you because you're Cody and I'm joining this other stable. Now I'm breaking up with the stable and doing my own thing. So I like that they are trying to tell a different kind of story between these two different teams and have the feud, you know, kind of be about a larger theme, even if it's, you know, fundamentally, it's still like a silly wrestling story, but you know, it's kind of, you know, Dusty Rhodes got a lot of juice out of, you know, putting big thematic ideas on his stories and promos that way. But the only guy who's been able to make it work is Conan, when they had Conan come in and lay down the law and be like, hey, I'm explaining what this is about. I'm explaining why my guys are better than your guys. And I'm explaining why that's the basis for the feud. And I'm have some hot lines in my promo that's going to make the crowd pop. And that was live, and that was exciting, and you know, that was the best thing in this feud so far, was Conan's promo. This is the second time where they've had this pre-tape promo where it seems like there might be good nuggets of content in there, like when Santana
was great.
Yeah, when Santana stands up and he's like, you can feel the sincerity and the passion, and he's pulling out these photos and talking about, you know, his real experience, like that shit should all be good. But like you said, the editing totally lets it down. It doesn't let us appreciate and feel the realness in those lines. And instead we get these weird cuts, and now we're looking at FTR, and it seems like it could have been filmed 2 hours later, and they're not really responding to what Santana was talking about, and it's very weird. It must be that they shot it on the day and they had to edit it in 35 minutes or something, and that's all I can guess.
Yeah.
But it's too bad, because I wish the presentation was better for, you know, what they're going for in this story can actually succeed.
Yeah, like it's entirely let down by that. And it's just like an insane thing, because like the 30-second Santana part was one of the better promos on the show. And then the smash cut to FTR Brawl, it makes me wonder, like, was it something that they realized they didn't shoot enough reaction stuff, and they came back, it's like, get back, we need to get this stuff, we don't have this, because that's how bizarre it felt. Because that's what came off to me, and that's what I was like, this felt like a freshman project where it's like, oh, we needed this shot, let's go care, do this, let's not care about, you know, if everything looks right and how out of place this will be when we edit it.
Yeah, totally agree.
A real problem in this to me is that, I mean, FTR is a part of like the big bad heel group in this company, and FTR really hasn't been like heelish enough in this program. Like, it's more about, you know, we come from similar backgrounds. Like, it was, our background was just as tough as yours, so we should be able to find, you should respect us because we all have the same thing. They should, I mean, I know it's dangerous, but they should just talk shit about Santana and Ortiz's upbringing and their background. You didn't go through shit. Look at what we went through. And everybody, of course, the fans would recognize that it was bullshit. And that would make you even more invested when Santana's talking about the real shit that he went through. But as it is, it's just kind of like, okay, you know, you've told us this.
Yeah, I think there's probably something you can do there. Like, you know, they're at risk of getting a bunch of angry tweets and cancellations and stuff if AEW starts like treading on a race-based angle or something. But that would be the conflict in this story that they're setting up, right? Is like, oh, we both have very difficult, you know, backgrounds and circumstances, and it's informed everything about our lives, and we're comparing them. Like, the way that comparison would come to a head in a violent conflict would be like, hey, we're the white guys and we think it's bullshit that you know, brown people's upbringing gets all the attention and they get the special treatment because they had economic hardships, when, hey, we had the same economic hardships, but nobody's concerned about us because we're white, right? Like, that's the complaint that comes of a violent feud out of this thing. And they just don't want to do it, and I can't say they're wrong for wanting to avoid that, because it would you know, you're kind of on thin ice there with a lot of people, but attempting to do the feud without doing that has made it just kind of not work.
Yeah, that's basically my point. And I mean, surely there's smart enough people in AEW that could figure out how to say that a little more gracefully. But you're exactly right. Like, that is the conflict that they've set up, but they just have not explored it in any real way. So, okay. Well, it's my turn. And you guys didn't pick either of the ones I was really focused on. So I'll just pick my favorite. And I'm going to delete the Britt Baker versus Nyla Rose match for a number of reasons. One, if Britt is going to be the ace of the women's division, and she is, I don't think there's any doubt about that, you have to tell ace stories with her, which they failed at in this. And here's how you know that they failed at it. When they do the introductions in the ring, you know, before the big title match, Britt Baker gets this insane pop. She gets the DMD. Everybody fucking loves her. They don't care if she's an asshole sometimes in her character. Nyla Rose... And remember, the crowd, the AEW crowd, always wants to do what the promotion wants, react in the way the promotion wants. You get the most timid little boos for Nyla. And I think, frankly, it's because the crowd doesn't really know what Nyla is supposed to be, like how to react to her. Then you run this whole match where Nyla is the babyface in the match. They do this spot with the belt, you know, where Nyla gets over on Britt in the end with this belt spot in the way that a babyface should. But the story of the match, I mean, in reality, the story that they should be telling is that Nyla is someone, and they told this on Road 2, but never on television, that Nyla is the one who Britt has never been able to beat in AEW. She's never gotten a victory over her. So it's really just, can the babyface champion overcome this heel who's always gotten over on her in the past? Easy story. And that's an A story. That's what I mean when I say you got to tell A stories. That's what it is. She's just overcoming something, you know, a big roadblock in her past, but they didn't do that. Then I think that really hurts the match because, look, the match is probably not going to be great. Britt, look, is not still not a great wrestler, and she's probably never going to be. But when she's in there with someone better than her, she does a great job. Nyla, I think, is the same thing. When she's in there with someone who's better than her, she can always carry her part of the bargain. But when you put these two together, it's very tough. And the crowd should be able to kind of pull you through that. They should be able to make Britt's matches succeed through pure will. But they couldn't do it here because there wasn't enough investment in this story, in these two characters. Not to mention that they got off, you know, very lost in the middle of this match. And the crowd was kind of like, you know, just didn't know what to do about it. But all that together made for just a real failure of a segment.
Yeah, it was not very good. Yeah, all the points you raise are correct. They didn't, you know, the feud is pretty much sucked from the beginning because they made it about burgers and they made it about Vicky Guerrero for no reason. And they had a tag match for some reason. Yeah, so I'm mostly just kind of like, okay, I'm glad this is over, and now we can move on to the next thing. Maybe Britt could have a better match with Yuka Sakazaki. That's mostly where I'm at with it. I will say, despite you know, despite not always having great outings in the ring, Britt Baker is extremely over, and that kind of did carry most of the match, especially the finish of the match. The crowd was super hot for. And it's kind of, it's hard not to look at the promotion's treatment of Britt Baker as a success when you get that reaction for a match that, you know, like you said, had a lot of problems in it. I will, you know, there was like a ref fuck up in here, right?
With
the three count. And that was a thing where it's like, you wonder, I don't know. I hate when crowds do ref bits. It's one of my least favorite things in like being part of a wrestling crowd is, you know, guys, they'll like the meme ref. It's like, oh, this one ref sucks, we're just going to talk about the ref this whole match. Or, oh, the ref fucked up, and now we're going to chant at the ref for 5 fucking minutes. I hate that. And it happened in this match, and that made me mad. And I was like, who fucking cares? So yeah, it was not very good.
It just didn't work. Like, I feel like the crowd willed this match into not just being a laborious, just drain, but the match just didn't work. It just seems like these two, for who they are as wrestlers, don't mesh with that. And it's a good thing that the crowd was really, the crowd did die off like for a long portion of this match, but it's a good thing that the crowd got up for the finish because it did kind of salvage the situation. It's just, you know, what they choose to put on TV and what they choose not to, and how they build up this match is something that it was just like Aaron, when you sat down and with like Road 2 and you knew that there was going to be a World Women's title build there, did you have the thought cross your mind like I did, where I was like, oh, they're going to do a much better job in this 3-minute segment than anything that they've done over the last 4 weeks building this up? And it played out right in front of us.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's an ongoing problem, I think, in AEW is if you pick out any feud and you want to search for a good story for that feud, it's somewhere in AEW content. But a lot of times you have to look for it to find it instead of them just delivering it to you as they should. I mean, there is so much content, and not just wrestling, there's just so much stuff to watch. You got to just tell people what you want them to know about the match and then reward those of us who watch everything with extra stuff on top of that, not make us all go searching for the best story that can be told about every single feud. Okay. Listener Delete, I don't know, I just thought this was funny. Good Drake in the Discord says, the guy who plays a cashier in the Miller Lite commercial who kind of looked like Lin-Manuel Miranda while I was fast-forwarding. That's a good enough delete as anything, as I can imagine.
Strong.
I don't get the commercials.
That's true. You're on the fight feed, so you don't
I
get
feel,
it.
I feel like I'm left out of this one.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, setting these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3-second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm going to bring you back in because I think this is a good time, actually, to we'll take a little break of talking about the show. Two big rumors going this week. We can hit them now. The one that seems most immediate is the rumor that Brian Danielson, a.k.a. Daniel Bryan, has signed a contract with AEW, according to our friends at bodyslam.net. And may appear as soon as the show at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens.
Yeah, this is, I think, almost progressed past the point of rumor. Like, it was a pretty credible rumor when Dave Meltzer said that, oh, they have a big surprise in their back pocket for the Queens show, the Arthur Ashe Stadium show. He said that, and then, you know, shortly thereafter said that Daniel Bryan is not with WWE, has not re-signed with WWE. Then there was a report, I think, by Fightful that Daniel Bryan was not in the WWE's merchandising plans, which, you know, lends credence to what Meltzer said. And I think Sean Ross Sapp even said that people in WWE believe that Brian Danielson, is going to AEW. So then bodyslam.net basically said, yes, we have a source that says Brian Danielson has put ink to paper, you know, fits with all of those facts. That's great for AEW, if true. You know, will be just a phenomenal moment at Arthur Ashe Stadium, if true. And, you know, they're going to have him hopefully have some cool matches. You know, maybe a couple will even rise to the level of dream matches, you know, which were there was a dearth of in his previous runs. So yeah, that's all very, you know, it totally makes sense because we've heard, you know, from the beginning that Brian Danielson's wishes were that he wants to be able to have the freedom to go and wrestle, you know, in CMLL, in New Japan, you know, do whatever weird things or, you know, independent things that he, has the interest in doing. And that doesn't happen in WWE, that happens in AEW. In AEW, they have, like we talked about, a working relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling at this point where Brian Danielson's going to be able to, you know, wrestle Yuji Nagata on a New Japan Strong show or, you know, go to Japan and do a Tokyo Dome show, hopefully when things open up. My interest in this, I've worked myself into just believing it's true and that it's going to happen. I mostly am interested to know if Tony Khan already had Brian Danielson wrapped up when he cut that promo on Nick Khan about Nick Khan trying to get a working relationship with New Japan. I want to know if Tony at that point already had Danielson in his back pocket and was saying, good fucking luck.
Yeah, that'd be kind of riveting. I'm still of kind of my previous mind that it is something that, at least to me personally, I want to see like how the debut happens to really kind of get a lot of enthusiasm, but he is someone that with the other person, I know that like quickly I've made like a term of this. You pay the tax for them. You pay the tax for Brian Danielson. If Brock Lesnar was going to show up there, you pay the Brock tax. And it's something with where I think the promotion is getting these kind of people is just like a no brainer kind of solution there. What kind of matches am I interested in? I mean, I think Brian Danielson is one of the top 10 wrestlers of all time. I'm just something that, you know, He was the boy who cried wanting to have a hair match with Blue Panther a lot with me. So that's what, that's another reason why I'm kind of wait and see with this. But I think it's kind of interesting the fact that after that bodyslam.net post, everyone else is like, oh yeah, we're going to post this thing, but we're not going to add anything to this whatsoever, which is two things that are happening. One, they don't know anything and they just want to piggyback on SEO. Like, I mean, like obviously like Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson, huge name. Like that's an easy way to kind of piggyback off it. Or there's the, like the stuff that like Nate was talking about, like Meltzer, Sean Rassap, that just like they can't provide like, oh yeah, from a, we also have heard from this, like they can't give any sort of confirmation at this point. So I think that that's kind of like the most interesting to me as thing to me as this played off is bodyslam.net shot their shot. It'll be funny to see how this kind of pans out for them out of that.
Yeah, and the, well, the other person, of course, there's talk that this is a little more nebulous. It's like CM Punk wants to return in ring. The suggestion is that it, that's most likely to be with AEW. And so that led to a lot of discourse. My kind of thought, well, no, that's not fair. It's not to, I don't have similar thoughts about them. It's more likely to me that Bryan Danielson can be a great in-ring wrestler even now. He certainly is a guy who's shown to have enough ideas to put together good matches, even if he's not able to wrestle at like his peak level, which obviously he can't because he's gotten older and has had injuries and whatnot. CM Punk, I have no real interest in watching CM Punk wrestle, but both of them, as you were talking about, Mike, and the tax you have to pay, someone else made this point, I think in a DM, so I'm, and it might've been Nate, so I'm not
trying.
It was
Double J Jarrett.
Okay, I'm willing to believe that. So I'm not trying to steal this point, but they made the point that these are the last, well, Punk is the last big bullet that WWE has to pop a rating, to add buzz or excitement. They've brought everyone else back. It's just Punk. So
they brought Goldberg back four or five times.
Right. So if AEW has any way of getting CM Punk on their television instead of letting him go back to WWE, they have to do it. It's a must do. So I think it's cool. I think it would could be cool. Nate, you, I believe, talked about the more interesting thing is a Punk and Bryan tag team, which I like that idea. That kind of hides some of Punk's deficiencies, but you still get Punk on the mic, which is obviously what everybody wants. So it definitely, like, I don't want to get excited about it, but just thinking about it, it's like, oh, that's a real injection of star power into AEW, which is always cool.
Yeah, I mean, there was a souring on Danielson, you know, like Mike, I think, kind of alluded to, where Danielson would keep saying, oh, I want to go and be in a G1. I want to go and do a Puestas match and all this. And then he would just re-sign with the WWE every time. And it's just like, oh, you don't mean what you say. You want the money. But, you know, that's his right to do. But it does kind of sour you on the guy saying these things. The souring on CM Punk has been even more severe, I think, mostly because he went back to the WWE after all the shit that he went through there and, you know, all the vindictive things they did and all of the same way. All of his very grandiose proclamations and stuff, even going back to like the pipe bomb promo where he's like, you know, the fans, you guys are going to keep pouring money into this company, even though it's terrible and sucks shit. So fuck you guys. But also, yeah, I'm going to go back and I'm going to be on this terrible Fox show and just totally tank the rest of my, you know, capital with the non-WWE fans. So the souring on him has been, I think, even more severe. But yeah, those two guys are like the last meaningful. Those are two guys who cross over to casual normie fans. And they go, oh, I love CM Punk. You know, CM Punk, he was going to change everything and the WWE fucked him. And that genre of fans still has a fondness for him. And it's going to be meaningful for AEW if they get either one of those guys. And if they get both of them, then that's, I think, monumental. And yeah, I think like Bryan and Punk versus the Bucks is like, you cover up, you know, kind of some of those guys' weaknesses as not being you know, regular performers for years and years recently. And the Bucks are going to be able to, you know, work a fast paced, exciting match around them, even if they're not totally ready to go yet. So I think that's the first thing. And, you know, do I want to see a bunch of, you know, every match in this promotion is 16 minutes. Do I want to see a bunch of 16 minute CM Punk matches at this point in his career? No, I really don't. But you know, for the big pop when they come out, for the casual fan that it's going to spark some interest with, I think, you know, you pay the tax, like Mike said.
And just to further cement the fact that there are so little cards left, that there's pretty heavy talk that it's going to be Roman Reigns versus The Rock at the next WrestleMania. Like, that's something that has been gone a little bit beyond rumors, like, multiple times. So that Punk's first time back, like, even with him diminishing the cachet, it's something that's very remarkable. And I think that's something that I think the track record over the last two odd years really has kind of cemented this as this kind of alternative. And then also something I don't think that y'all brought up was Punk is on the heel show with Cody Rhodes and Stephen Amell. So.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, it's just interesting. But like, I think that that's like, now we talk about like those kind of variables that could have gone from where at least CM Punk was 12, 18 months ago to now.
Yeah. I just, you know, Punk didn't sign with this company, even though it was the clear heir to the anti-WWE fan sentiment that drove all the interest in New Japan and drove the interest in Ring of Honor and drove the interest that could sustain a second national wrestling promotion that does significant business on national cable television. That he didn't sign with them from the beginning is kind of like, oh, you were just wrong, or you didn't mean it when you said those things. So it's really kind of, if they are signing him and they're going to give him a run, it's just Tony Khan is bailing this guy's legacy out. He would be remembered for the terrible line on the Fox talk show. And now he has a second chance to be remembered for all the good things that he did in wrestling, basically. So if I'm him, I'm saying, yes, please God, give me six matches. Let me tag with Brian, and just let me do anything to pop a crowd and not be remembered for the Fox show. And you know, if he can get paid, and you know, boost his cash flow at the same time, I don't know why he wouldn't do it.
And not be remembered for royally fucking over Colt Cabana. Wrestling fans' favorite people, you know, in all of wrestling.
The person that I think that history looks a lot more kindly back towards Colt Cabana with 1 hour tees and really revolutionizing the revenue process in independent wrestling versus a pipe bomb promo that was booked into oblivion. Like, let's not forget.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Colt Cabana, it's at least an argument who had more impact on wrestling, period, between Punk and Cabana. But anyway, that's another thing that'll be interesting. My last follow-up is, with all these reports coming out today, can they really hold off, if they have Bryan Danielson signed, can they really hold off for 2 months before they put him on TV?
Well, yes, if they also have CM Punk signed and they put him on in the interim.
Yeah, he's got to come out in Chicago, right?
Right. You do Punk in Chicago, and you do Brian in Queens. And I mean, holy shit, that's massive. That's gargantuan. But yeah, I guess you do wait, because you just continue to drive interest in every single episode of Dynamite. And they go, is this going to be where Brian shows up? Is this going to be where Brian shows up? Is this where Punk is going to show up? And you know, why not drag that out and keep that interest and keep, you know, building that until you can peak it and pay off, like in pro wrestling.
Also, just realized the first Rampage is in Pittsburgh, which, you know, famously was the WrestleMania, the Daniel Bryan WrestleMania. So, you know, where he didn't come out in 30th. So that's also kind of funny to debut Danielson in Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah, the
Royal Rumble.
Royal Rumble, right. Royal Rumble.
Okay. Was that the Rock and Roman Reigns one?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, the Rey Mysterio is 30th.
It all comes together.
The bizarre photo.
It does. All right, let's get into the rest.
How over do you think Dominic Mysterio would be in this promotion?
God. No, I'm not.
Well, we need another canonical Guerrero to manage Andrade.
You know which one they need to hire, and he is doing bookings and esports broadcasting.
I know. It's time.
He's doing the New Japan show, isn't he?
He is. We're of course, talking about the Drama King, Matt Raywald, who is the true heir to the Guerrero family legacy.
Him and Sasha Banks.
Yes. All right. As we talked about, Chris Jericho versus Sean Spears kicked it off. Jericho won with the Judas Effect. And then MJF came out and said Jericho's going to have to wrestle Nick Gage in a no DQ match next week. There was a Miro video. He said God's favorite champion will fight at the homecoming show in Jacksonville. This is the word of the Redeemer. So I guess no Miro until they get back to Jacksonville.
Yeah, that's kind of wild to think about. Like, I mean, he's been doing great, like, pre-tape stuff. And I kind of was expecting that. I mean, Jacksonville, though, Jacksonville is, like, really 2 weeks. So that's not necessarily that wild. It's kind of something that I feel like that we probably kind of surprised not to see him a lot on this opening few weeks of the tour, though.
Absolutely. Then we had Nate's favorite match, Doc Gallows versus Frankie Kazarian. Gallows won with the tree slam. Afterwards, the Good Brothers were doing a beatdown. Omega came out with Callus. Callus says, this is what happens when you mess with the Elite. Omega says the Elite Hunter has now become, and then there's a little, you know, Don Callus helping him out, the Elite Hunted. And Callus says they're going to give a preview of what they're going to do to Hangman Page. Page comes out. Callus asks if he's stupid or just drunk. Page, I wish you would have grabbed the mic for this. Off mic says, I'm both. And then attacks. Big brawl. Dark Order comes out to help. You know, setting up all these, this elimination tag and what's coming after that.
I think Dark Order got a bigger pop than Hangman. That's what it felt like to me. Yeah, they beat the Elite Hunter, which was funny to me. You know, but when you have the big LG, Doc Gallows, you know, he's a monster. You can't deny him his singles wins ever, and especially not in this promotion. I wish I had the wherewithal to do a big bit about how great this match was or something. but I can't. But it doesn't matter because I still love the big LG Doc Gallows. And the quality of his matches matters very little to me.
Yeah, at first, like when they first counted three on Kazarian, I was like, well, that kind of sucks, you know, to kill this. But then the more I thought about it, it's like, you know what? This was a fun little kind of C plot on this show for however many months. And it's just kind of, yes, it's ending ignominiously. Is that the right way to say that word?
Oh, maybe.
But maybe that's like what it deserves, you know?
I think they could have gotten, I mean, I don't know that it's over. I think it probably, most things don't end with a nice little bow on them in this promotion. They kind of continue on. You're like, oh, I guess this is still happening. So I think it still continues. And I think you can get more out of it. But yeah, I was surprised that he lost. But then he's like, I don't really care if he wins. It's kind of funnier that he lost.
It's definitely funny. We're getting corrected in the chat that that was the year Batista won in Pittsburgh. The Rock Roman Reigns one was the next year in Philly. But I forgot this.
Philly. Okay, yeah.
I forgot this, that the Pittsburgh Royal Rumble, where that did happen, was also Punk's last match. So.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. So that one, and that led to WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans, which was the Bryan WrestleMania.
Absolutely. So that could all work out. All right, Team Taz is backstage. Stark says there's going to be a big celebration next week in Charlotte. We cut right to Brian Cage with Dasha, and he says, well, that works out. I love celebrations.
Yeah, you know, Brian Cage was a great candidate to have a manager for, and now he doesn't have a manager anymore because they have to do a stable breaking apart storyline.
Hobbs overalls with FTW on it were really sick.
Very cool, but yeah, no Cage.
Let's see how quickly maybe Vicky can get him. You know, do you just need someone?
I like how Brian Cage is the only fucking guy in the promotion who doesn't have a manager. Yeah, he's the only guy who can't say two, you know, string a fucking sentence together.
Yeah, it's. I was so high. I'm like, oh, this is so perfect. Brian Cage is such a great talent for a television promotion. You give him a cool manager like Taz. I don't know. It's been a long time since we saw a really, you know, kick-ass, fiery Taz promo like we were getting last year. But no, they have to do these stories where the stables are constantly shifting. So no, he has to talk for himself now.
Darby Allin versus Wheeler Yuta was up next. Hikuleo was in the crowd for some reason. Well, we would find out that reason later. This also included Orange Cassidy and Sting doing the Orange Cassidy bit of kicking each other in the shins. Very funny. Darby ultimately won with the coffin drop. After the match, Blade attacked Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, the Sting bit here killed. This is why Sting's a babyface superstar, and why, you know, other guys can't get to that level ever in the business. Because they do the Orange Cassidy bit, and Sting just fully gamely plays along. He does little kicks back to Orange Cassidy. They both go back with a super kick and then just kind of tap feet. And then the peak, the highlight, the payoff, the punchline, Sting goes to do his chest beating and just kind of does it with the Orange Cassidy energy, where he's like, yep, beating my chest. It killed me.
Sting was always cool. Sting was always cool.
Sting's got to be sitting there thinking, like, fuck, if I would have thought of this 20 years ago, I would have really saved my body.
Yeah, Sting is getting cooler, even Sting.
Yes. I always, this isn't an original thought, but I always say, like, the least you can work for the most money is obviously, like, the best plan in normal life. And that's obviously makes even more sense in wrestling. Like, the least you can do to be the most over is the winner. We got a video recapping the Lance Archer and Jon Moxley feud leading up to the main event on the show tonight. And then the women's title match with Britt Baker defeating Nyla Rose with the lockjaw, which we discussed. And then the FTR and Santana and Ortiz segment. Then we had my runner-up for D-Elite. We had Andrade El Idolo out with Tony Schiavone. He says he has a surprise for everyone. And folks, it's Chavo Guerrero. Chavo makes his way out. He's glad that people remember him. And he says there are a lot of talented people backstage, but none are as talented as Andrade. The Death Triangle comes out. They're mad that Andrade has been mentioning them. They don't hide. Pac is back. Pac returns with Death Triangle. I don't want to bury that. The crowd wants to do a Cerro Miedo chant, but Andrade just wants to barrel through that and talk anyway. That goes poorly. Also, I think it was in Spanish, and so I didn't know what he was saying. Of course, a lot of the crowd, I'm sure, in Dallas, Texas, did. Andrade asks why they work for Pac. He says, now you work for Andrade. Pac says they don't work for him. They're a brotherhood. Penta says, and Alex lets us know that Penta says, why would they want to join up with Andrade when he's not even on their level? I just thought this was a real shit show of a segment. The Andrade political hit continues.
Death Triangle got an awesome reception when they came out, and looked like superstars, except for Alex fucking Abrahantes, who sucks and brings the entire act down and looks like a goofball. So that was good. Anything is an upgrade over Vicky Guerrero, so I cannot say, I wouldn't delete this just because at worst, Chavo's better than Vicky. It seemed like a lot of people had opinions on Chavo Guerrero and like him as a person and as a speaker and as a promo guy and as a potential manager. And I just don't know where what these opinions are based on. I think, if accepting a Cubs fan who's, covers Lucha as a compulsion and possibly an illness, everybody else who's ingested a whole lot of Chavo Guerrero content at this point, that's an indictment of you, not him. I don't know where that comes from, that you're like, oh, I have this long and checkered past with Chavo Guerrero, so I don't want to see him. That makes you crazy to me as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, it's better than Vicky. He looked good in a suit. He got a good reaction. All these are positives. I will say his promos seem to be like mostly babyface, which doesn't fit with Andrade. He even like he had a line that was like, you know, pretty fine, where he like kind of teased Pac for only speaking what English, and the crowd was like, oh. And then Chavo was like, no, that's not a dig. I didn't mean to take a dig at you, man. It's like, aren't you managing a heel? You could just take the shot. So that was all strange. But yeah, again, this is at worst an upgrade, so I can't really complain about it.
It's just at like a certain point, like they keep on like doing stuff, and I don't know. Like, I'm just trying to like piece this together in my head with like Andrade, and yeah, no, Chavo's an upgrade. Like that's undeniable. The most interesting part now of this act, including my favorite wrestler of the company, is what's the deal with the iPad guy? Like the iPad guy, like just doing his job. I'm just going like I want to wrote to about Andrade's manservant. Like that's the kind of thing that you can really turn this around there. Get on the vlogs. Like that's what they need to be doing with this. Not like having Alex Abrahantes out there with Pac, with like Pac could have just like cut been like stepped in there, ripped the microphone out of Alex Abrahantes and just shouted out, "You're not at our level. We're a brotherhood," and everyone walked away looking like badasses.
I can't believe Pac wants to be in the same room as Alex Abrahantes.
Yes.
Let alone be in a fucking unit with him. That doesn't work for me at all. I don't think, you know, do they sit together in catering? Does Pac sit near him in catering? I don't believe it.
Does Pac believe this guy exists? Like, does he acknowledge the fact that Alex Abrahantes is in his presence?
I think he does because he's annoyed by him, probably. That would be my guess. The iPad guy does rule. I love just that. I hope it never even amounts to anything or builds to anything. It's just part of the set dressing, part of the world building, that Andrade is important enough that he has a lint roller guy. But yeah, you know, this is kind of, I think, a good course correction in theory, because it does pay a little respect to the terrible job they've done with Andrade so far, where it's like, yeah, no, there was actually a surprise, so we're not dropping that. That was a thing. And yeah, Andrade actually did want to be with Vicky because he respects the Guerrero name so much. So you can get him away from Vicky, but still keep that story element true and retcon it by having it be Chavo instead. These are fine sort of course correction attempts. So, you know, count me not among the people who are like freaking out about this.
I don't think Chavo is going to be around next week. I don't think Chavo is coming to manage him. I didn't get that at all.
Oh, I thought that was what?
I thought they just brought
this was Chavo doing a promo
out in Dallas. I just thought they brought Chavo out for the Texas crowd, and he said executive consultant. It wasn't like, I don't know. I just didn't really get the feeling that he's always going to be around. I mean, Andrade then went ahead and cut a promo after he introduced Chavo.
Executive consultant kind of reads to me as like a. Oh, I'm the advocate. Like, this is my manager title. You're my executive consultant, and I have to have a fancy title for it to pretend it's not wrestling or whatever. But yeah, no, if this is just a one-off pop for Chavo, then, and he goes back to Vicky, I'll be just as annoyed next week.
I think Vicky's gone. I mean, I think they've gotten rid of that. I don't know. It's just my real problem with the segment, whether Chavo stays or goes. I always, as a kid, I fucking loved Chavo. I thought he was hilarious. So I'll always have a soft spot in my heart for Chavo, whatever else happens. But my problem with the segment was Andrade doesn't come out of this looking good. He doesn't look cool. He's trying to barrel through this promo over the crowd. And it's like, dude, you're a big fucking star. Stop these people. Make them pay attention to you. That's your job.
Or actually barrel over them instead of
yes.
being like, yeah, I'm going to keep talking, but I'm not going to do it with the conviction necessary to make you hear me.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll get canceled maybe for this, but he seemed like a pussy. That's just what it felt like. It was just like, fucking say what you want to say, Andrade. You have probably a huge dick. You are super hot. You got your fucking chest out. You're posting pics all the time of you banging Charlotte. Just fucking pull your dick out and like show the crowd who's in control here. And it's you, man. It's got to be you.
Yeah, I am canceling you for that for sure.
Mike, I can see Mike cringing, literally.
Mike did a full furrowed brow, like, oh, like holding the you know, point of the tip of his nose or the base of his nose.
Sorry, I'm just fired up about this because Andrade is supposed to be cool, and they're not doing anything to like hide his deficiencies. They are letting him just like put a fucking spotlight on the stuff he's not as good at. I hate it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Earlier tonight, the Hardy Family Office came out to explain why Matt Hardy wasn't there, and there was a brawl, and Christian made the save. And then Christian was backstage, and he says, it took four of you to take out Marco's stunt. I thought last week was the end between Matt Hardy and me, but it wasn't. Next week, Christian and Jurassic Express versus Angelico and Private Party.
I mean, we're going to get a really good Angelico and Private Party dance out to the ring. Like, the entrance is going to be very, very good here.
I went so far as to watch a clipped video of their entrance on Twitter. It was like, yeah, I do want to watch Angelico and Private Party enter again. That's a fun trio.
And I guess it's going to be something that is going to be on Fight for the Fallen. So, you know, everyone could... like, my favorite thing about, like, Angelico now, and the most positive thing I've had about Angelico in this promotion, is now we get the great crowd shots that Keith Mitchell must have of just the dorkiest people trying to do it. And whereas Nate is nailing it dead on, dead to rights. If Keith Mitchell had you in the crowd each week, Nate, like, there would be like there would be the Epitasis cam. It's like, all right, and Helco's coming out, got to the Epitasis cam. But the fact
I
that
do,
they,
I
like,
have
the
benefit that
dude.
You can really only see from my shoulders up. So I really only have to do, you know, like 20% of it.
But it's the most important 20%.
For sure.
It is. Then we had QT Marshall, Aaron Solo, and Nick Camerato with Alex Marvez. Marvez asked if he thinks he owes Tony an apology, and QT says yes, he'll give it to him next week. Then it was Orange Cassidy versus the Blade, Orange one with the orange punch. And after the match, he gave him another orange punch with Blade's brass knuckles.
Took a big bump on this match on the turnbuckle. That was gnarly.
Yeah, yeah, this was a fun little, like, death spot match. Like, that's a statement on what they really believe in Orange Cassidy, is giving him kind of like that pre-main event match. And, you know, this was a lot of fun. You know, I mean, it let the Blade like doing like doctor bombs in the middle of this match. Like, I had a good time with this one.
Then we had Chris Jericho with Alex Marvez, and he said, if MJF is going to bring in the most demented and violent man in wrestling to face me, I'm going to bring the most demented and violent version of me to face Nick Gage. That's why next week it's Nick Gage versus the Painmaker. I knew it was fucking coming, and I still lost my mind when he turned around.
How could you not know it was coming when the giant spiked jacket is right in the camera from the first shot? I want to believe that Chris Jericho was like, did not want to do a match with Nick Gage. He's like, oh, this guy, you know, some mud show freak death match guy who never amounted to shit. You know, he can't wrestle. He can't work. You know, he stinks or whatever. And he didn't want to do it. But then Tony came to him and was like, Chris, what if you do it as the Painmaker? And then Chris was like, ooh, now we're talking. I can bust out the Painmaker character. It makes sense because he's all hardcore and scary and he wears eye makeup. And that's what got Chris. That's my personal headcanon is Chris didn't want to do it. But when he got a chance to do the Painmaker character again, he's like, yes, now it's on.
This was just the fact that Chris Jericho said the Painmaker and then put his fedora on afterwards. Just classic.
And the crowd popped for it.
Yeah, the crowd just like they popped even more for the fedora. Like they knew that it was the Painmaker. It's like, oh, but he has got to have his hat on. And yeah, no, like he definitely agreed this match because he's allowed to put on the makeup and the fedora. Absolutely.
My only thing is I feel like this should, I mean, they've really got to up the stakes if this is the second match in this series for Jericho. So,
well, the last one has to be Wardlow, right? Wardlow has to be the last labor.
Yeah.
Wardlow had probably the most brutal form of his knee against one of Dustin's students on Dark this week. Like the student took it right on their temple. Like he's been murdering people. It's fantastic.
I just don't want Wardlow to take another loss though. I don't like that.
Ever. Wardlow should never lose.
I agree. He should have never lost his entire career.
Mm-mm.
Okay, we got a video recapping Malakai Black and Cody Rhodes with the fucking funniest graphic. I mean, the second funniest after the Painmaker versus Nick Gage. but the Malakai Black Cody graphic is amazing. I urge you to seek it out if you haven't seen it.
I'm 15% more positive on Malakai Black this week because he spent all day putting over Miyu Yamashita on Twitter today.
Yes, he did. That was good. He said Miyu's spin kick is better than his. And he's right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Grant, he doesn't have world-class talents like Suzume or Hikari Noah bumping for him, so you got to take that into account. But
yeah, he was with the developmental talent in NXT before, so.
That's canon now, by the way. It's been reported that they now have readjusted NXT to being developmental.
Amazing. And then the main event for the IWGP US title, Lance Archer defeated Jon Moxley with a 10 count after Moxley went through the table with barbed wire on it. After the match, Hikuleo comes out and faces off with Archer. So they'll face each other next week.
Should also point that was, you know, they did a cute reference where they talked about, oh, you know, Moxley put Archer through double tables. So they did they did the same finish in reverse here, which is Moxley did that to me in Tokyo. Now you're in my hometown. I'm going to do it to you now. So, you know, just some nice little interpromotional synchronicity.
Yes. All right, the Hikuleo thing is interesting to me because this title has to get back to people who work primarily in New Japan at some point, right? Do we think they're just going to pass it back to Hikuleo here?
No, I think probably New Japan is happy to use Lance Archer if AEW will let him in the West. Cause, you know, they liked our Lance Archer before, liked him a lot before. So I think they're probably just open to using Lance Archer. I can't imagine they're going to have Hikuleo beat him right away. But then again, I was wrong about the match this week. So that this just feels to me like, oh, you know, it's a little interstitial title defense. We're making fans more familiar with the belt. So maybe now they'll check out Resurgence. And, you know, we'll get some exposure and eyes on Hikuleo, who's basically, you know, not done anything in any promotion to this point. And New Japan's probably ready to start getting some of their investment back on him.
All right, well, that was Dynamite for this week. If you enjoy our show, the best way to support it is to go over to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. Plenty of good stuff. We, of course, did the Limp Bizkit episode this week with Nate and I talking about our trip to Hammond, Indiana to watch Limp Bizkit. Nate Tharos asked earlier, was there anybody on this show that was as good of a promo as either the mayor of Hammond, Indiana or Fred Durst?
On this show, no. There was not.
All right. I think you're right. There may be people in this promotion who are as good of promos.
Yes.
But not on this night. And we also, of course, do our light show where we preview Dynamite every Wednesday morning. And Nate breaks down all the relevant vlog content. Next week, Mike, I know for once we have some content in the can. You and Drew are going to be talking about just some, I think there's going to be some DFW content on there, isn't there?
Sadly, we did not go We did not go to PCW. We did not see the International Players Club live. But what it is Drew and I kind of had a realization that we were at some pretty remarkable for good or for bad reason shows throughout our life. And we sat down and just kind of talked about it. It just was one of those things where like, we were recounting what exactly all happened at the Nexus Raw that everyone completely forgets because it was the Nexus Raw. Like, it was during the it was one of the first 3-hour Raws, and it was during the Celebrity GM era. And the Celebrity GM was the A-Team, the 2011 version of the, or 2010 for one film, the A-Team in Miami. So it's a whole lot of fun. I'm excited for everyone to check it out on Monday.
All right, of course, we have the Discord, as I mentioned earlier, so check that out. Lots of good content always over at patreon.com/everythingelite, and we do this show live every Wednesday night, so you can check that out if you subscribe at the $8 tier. Next week, Fight for the Fallen from Charlotte. Tony Khan will announce a major new live event. There was some talk about this in the Discord. Maybe one of these, like, quarterly specials that they've teased for next year.
That's what I mean. There's supposed to be one this year, right?
I think maybe even this year.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it could be something that's going to be bridging all out to Full Gear this year.
That whole thing was so confusing to me of like,
yeah,
Rampage and these quarterly specials and like moving to TBS and
everything but the specials moving to TBS. Yeah, yeah. So,
right.
I mean, that's my assumption there, unless they're announcing a UK tour. Like, that's like the two things. Or their West Coast, because they have not yet done California. So that's something as well. So
I'm still kind of insane, right?
Yeah. No, like yeah. And that's the thing with like by the time, no, it'll be like a few days afterwards, because next weekend is the first PWG show back, right? Like Mystery Vortex is coming up, and the idea that there might be people in AEW who have wrestled for PWG before they've brought AEW to Southern California is kind of wild.
Yeah, I know they, you know, have based a lot of the cities and run these stuff off their internal metrics for, you know, viewership and buys and stuff. That's just wild that apparently that hasn't, you know, the viewership or buys on the West Coast in Los Angeles, the second most populous city, hasn't rated high enough for them to run a significant show or any show out there. That's weird. I guess there would have to be some reason for it. I just don't know what it would be.
Well, the good thing for them is we're also seeing in most of these cities, other than Miami, they're also selling more tickets than they did the last time they were in these cities. So they're not in it. I mean, we're still very early in this, of course, but they're not in any danger of overrunning cities.
Yeah. And it's worth noting again for that Miami number, they changed buildings. So capacity differences, even with everything. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great sign. You know, I don't know if it's a great sign of viewership growth on television necessarily. I mean, you know, we always knew that their plus DVR viewership was getting them, you know, bigger viewership than their initial sort of overnights or whatever. But that they're getting people to come back to shows and getting them to bring new people or new people are deciding to buy tickets is a great indicator of growth and people's, I think, happiness with the promotion overall. And I think a lot of that is probably for the live show. You know, they send people home happy a lot of the time. You know, you get a hometown win with this Lance Archer thing, for example, where it's like you're not ending 9 out of 10 weeks with heat where the heels win and you go home and, you know, you have to wait 5 more weeks to see it on TV.
We also have next week Christian and Jurassic Express versus Angelico and Private Party, the elimination tag match, the Elite versus the Dark Order. And as I recall, that also includes whether there's going to be a tag title challenger from Dark Order for the Bucks and Hangman Page's match against Kenny Omega. It's all comes down to the winners of that. I assume that will go on last on Dynamite next week. Nick Gage versus the Painmaker in a no DQ match.
No rules.
And the IWGP US titles on the line with Lance Archer against Hikuleo.
It's an insane show.
It's just like, I mean, I know, and you kind of like, you let it, you know, run over you or whatever the right word I'm looking for, but
you let it register.
Nick Gage versus the Painmaker on Dynamite is insane.
So it's like baseline insane that we're like, they're putting Nick Gage on TV. They're letting Nick Gage wrestle a match on national cable television. That's insane that he's doing it against Chris Jericho. Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, Chris Jericho's, I don't know, among the top, certainly among the top 20, like, most decorated American wrestlers, probably among the top 10 most decorated American wrestlers. I guess I mean Western wrestlers. He's Canadian. No, he's born in America, right?
Manhattan? Yeah, he was born in Manhasset, and then
Manhasset.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a whole another layer of insanity that we have not really reckoned with yet.
Yeah, let's take this another way. We remember when the Nick Gage as a Casino Battle Royal participant was kind of like bandied about. Where was Chris Jericho on the list of, oh, Nick Gage is coming into this company, who would be the great matchup of Chris Jericho? Would not even be on your first page if you're doing a single
wouldn't
list.
Have entered my mind whatsoever. Would not have been a consideration.
Just wild.
Yeah, it rules. I'm very excited about it. It's going to seem insane as it's about to happen, when it's happening. Just I can't wait. I just hope it's good.
Yeah.
That's I really hope it's it. Good. That's one where you're really rooting for the guys to go out and really do something.
Yeah, yes. It's something that I really want to go. It's a 50. If it wasn't for other stuff going on and other promotions having stuff going on, I'd be like, all right, I have to go see Nick Gage in AEW. And now I'm like, this is going to be a fight for me over the next week.
Yeah, I would love to go. Sounds awesome. And that Malakai Black versus Cody match they announced for August 3rd, the homecoming show in Jacksonville. Okay. Well, I think that's everything for this week. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review. And support the show by going to patreon.com/everythingelite or manscaped.com where you can get a 20% off. You can get 20% off and free shipping by using the promo code THISIS. But that's it for Mike, for Nate. I'm Aaron. We'll see you next week. Again!